thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is presented by preaching minister Josh Yeager. Let's tune in now for Josh's message.
So when I was a young child, I was very sickly. I had really bad asthma, and I was allergic to about 35 different foods. And I don't remember how many times I went to the hospital because of asthma attacks and different things, but it was several times. So my mom used to read me this book called It Couldn't Get Any Worse. And I'll be honest, at the time, it wasn't a meaningful book to me because I really felt pretty awful and I didn't think it could get any worse. But it's probably one of the books that I remember the most about, that I remember the most from when I was growing up, even though at the time it wasn't my favorite. I would say now it probably is one of my favorites, and I'm glad that my mom read it to me. But it's one of those stories that it tries to bring you to a place where you understand that, hey, there's more going on here. So the story goes like this, and there's actually different versions of this story. I actually don't remember it being looking like this. I remember different pictures, and I've actually looked for my mom's book, but I can't find it, and it makes me sad. But so this is kind of it, but it's not the pictures I remember. But it goes like this. So a woman, set decades ago in a fishing village, was very unhappy with her lot in life, and her family was big, and they lived in one small one-room hut. I mean, it was just small. She had like, you know, five or six kids, and it was just craziness in her one-room hut with her husband and everybody. And when she went to the market one day, and she mentioned to one of the old fishmongers there that, my life is horrible, and my house is crazy, and I don't think it could get any worse. And he said, well, do you have any animals? And she looked at him and thought, what a strange question. Well, of course we have animals. Everybody has animals. You know, we have a goat, a sheep, a pig, a rooster, some chickens, and a cow. And he goes, well, I have a solution for you. Go home and take your goat into your house with you. And she thought, how in the world could this possibly be the answer to my question? But he's old, he's wise, you know, maybe he knows what he's talking about. So she goes home and she takes the goat into her house, and as can be expected, life gets worse and harder. And she went back to him the next week and she said, it's even more difficult with that goat in my house. I can't believe you told me to bring that goat. You know, now he's pooping all over the floor and he's eating off the table and he's doing all these things. And he says, well, I have a solution for you. Go home and take your sheep in with you as well. And she thought, what am I doing? You know, how? And by the end of the story, she has all of her animals in the house with her. And she's just beyond, you know, she can't take it anymore. She goes to the fishmonger one more time, and she says, I just can't take it anymore. He says, okay, I've got a solution for you. Go home and take all the animals out of your house. And she shows up the next day, and she says, my house is so peaceful. How many people heard that story before? Anybody heard it? Okay. You know, so a lot of times we kind of have this thought in life. We think it couldn't get any worse. You know, this is the worst it could possibly get. It couldn't get any worse. And sometimes we think about this when it comes to our lives. We think, my life couldn't get any worse. Or sometimes we even think about this when it comes to our country. Our country couldn't get any worse. And so that's what this series that we're starting today is all about. It's about this idea that there's a way to live out faith when circumstances are not what we think they should be. I don't think it's any secret that American culture is changing. I don't think there's no secret. I mean, this is just the way that life is right now. Our American culture is changing. In fact, decades ago, churches held a prominence in society, at least in the Bible Belt, that they don't hold anymore. Just 50 years ago, 4 out of 5 people would say that, hey, you should go seek counsel from a minister. You should go seek counsel from a pastor or a preacher or an elder in your church, you know, somebody who holds a spiritual position. But now, 1 in 5 Americans believes that that's a good idea. I mean, that's just the reality of our times. The Barna Group has done some significant research when it comes to this, and what they found is that 46% of Americans believe that religion is part of the problem in the world today. 46% of Americans believe that religion is part of the problem in America today. There's been a significant shift in our world and in our culture and in our country. I think deep down inside, we probably all know that it could get a lot worse, right? I mean, we all know, it could get a lot worse. I mean, history tells us that. I mean, we can think of like Stalin in Russia or Hitler in Nazi Germany, and we realize it could get a lot worse, but we still struggle and we find it difficult to figure out how do we move forward? How do we live? How do we act in a culture that no longer sees religion as a whole, and Christianity is included in that, as something that's worth pursuing? How do we live and what do we do? And especially in the Bible Belt of American culture, we're so used to holding that place of prominence and position that now that we don't, it's kind of shocking and it's kind of offensive, and we tend to respond in some not great ways. I remember growing up in Colorado and being in that place, the church had already gotten kind of pushed out of society, and there was already that pushing, but I think that even now in the Bible Belt, we're experiencing that same thing. And so the question is, how do we live? How do we live? And that's why we're going to talk about Daniel. Oh, wow. God's saying, yes, talk about Daniel. Okay. So just to give you a little bit of background and a little bit of lead up to where Daniel is in the story of Israel and Judah, remember that God established this nation out of slaves. He pulled these people out of Egyptian bondage, and he sent them into the promised land. He gave them some land. They were ruled by a bunch of judges. The judges went by the wayside, and they finally got a king, a guy by the name of Saul. He wasn't a very good king, and David was the second king. He was a good king, and he kind of united all the tribes, and you remember that then his son Solomon ruled over the united tribes, but Solomon's son Rehoboam didn't do a great job. He kind of made some dumb moves, and he divided the kingdom. And so now you have North Israel, which their capital was Samaria. You have South Judah, their capital was Jerusalem. Well, at this point in Daniel, what we're seeing is that North Israel had been gone and extinct for a long time. And in Daniel, we find that South Judah, has now been exiled. And in fact, Isaiah, a prophet in the 8th century B.C., predicted that all this would happen. He said this to King Hezekiah, one of the good kings of South Judah. He said, "Hear the word of the Lord Almighty. The time will surely come when everything in your palace and all that your predecessors have stored up until this day will be carried off to Babylon. And nothing will be left, says the Lord. And some of your descendants, your own flesh and blood, who will be born to you, will be taken away, and they will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." And so at this point, where we start off in Daniel, North Israel has already been destroyed. South Judah is now captured and destroyed. It's all happened. Nebuchadnezzar has sacked Jerusalem. He's the Assyrian king. He's the Babylonian king. He walks into the temple at Jerusalem, and he takes some of the treasures out of the temple of Jerusalem. And look at what he does with these treasures. He carries them off to the temple of his god in Babylonia and put them in the treasure house of his god. And this is basically his way of saying, my god beat your god. My god's more powerful than your god. And then he takes it one step further, and he does exactly what Isaiah said he would do. Daniel chapter 1, verse 3, "Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years. And after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names, to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. So we read this, and it's kind of funny how when you're separated from a story in distance or from history, it just doesn't, you know, hit you real hard. You think, you read this story and you think, and you stop there and you just kind of move past that moment. But we just don't think about what the Jewish people were going through. I mean, just like when you read about the Civil War, you know, you read about the Civil War and you just kind of move on with your life. We're not living it. But this crisis, I mean, just put yourself in the shoes of these Jews who are living through this. I mean, think about the seriousness of this crisis. I mean, Jerusalem, the abode, the place where God lived, that Jerusalem is destroyed. And in the ancient world, this was taken as impotence of a patron god of that nation. You know, if one nation destroyed another nation, it was all, you know, looked at in the cosmic sphere of things. Like, oh, you know, if Babylon took Judah, then that means that Babylon's god was stronger than Judah's god. Wow, this is getting loud. You have turned me up a little bit. What's that? Oh. So I just want to point something out here, though. There are still some people of good faith in Judah. There's still some people of good faith, because look at these names. Look at these names that we read about in this story. Daniel means my judge is God. Hananiah means the Lord is gracious. Mishael means who is what God is. Azariah means the Lord has helped. I mean, look at those names. I mean, they fly in the face of what's happened, right? I mean, Judah has been destroyed. Jerusalem is gone. The temple has been ransacked and stolen from. And yet people are still naming their kids these names. And so what we have here is we have some faithful families who have kind of gotten caught up in the backwash of God's judgment. Have you ever been caught up in the backwash of something? I remember one particular time when we had a substitute teacher at school, and my class was particularly rowdy at that time. And I mean, the substitute teacher gave the teacher a bad report, and then when the teacher got back, I mean, we had some major consequences. We had, you know, recess shortened and taken away. We had worksheets that we had to do. You know, I was completely innocent, okay? I didn't do anything wrong, but I got caught up in the backwash of this whole thing. Maybe you've experienced it in the job place. You know, somebody on the, you know, high up on the corporate ladder embezzled some funds, and so you get laid off. Not because of anything that you had done, but simply because somebody had done something really dumb above you. I mean, think about it. We all experience things like this. What about when your parents choose to divorce? You didn't do anything wrong. You were innocent in the situation, yet your parents break up your family and create hardship and difficulty. You see, the truth is that oftentimes God's best have suffered the worst that this world has to offer. Can everybody hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, all right. A lot of times God's best suffer the worst that this world has to offer. In fact, the very first story of Scripture after Adam and Eve, you remember what it is? Cain and Abel, right? Cain and Abel. I mean, where Abel, the righteous brother, he makes the right decision, he offers the correct sacrifice, and he's killed because his brother is jealous. See, oftentimes, God's best have suffered the worst that this world has to offer. We've all been caught in the backwash. We've all had to suffer for something that somebody else did. And so here we have in this story the best and the most faithful being taken to Babylon to serve the king. And once again, just imagine the blow. Can you imagine having your children grow up in your home and then them being taken by a foreign nation, a foreign power. Uh-oh. Lights flicker there. They're taken by a foreign nature and or a foreign nation, and they're given 3 years of schooling in Babylonian culture, in Babylonian language, and in Babylonian religion. Now, what we know from history is that, and what we know from this story is that a lot of times Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians, this is really hard to preach with this going on. I'm sorry. Are you guys able? I almost want to just cut it short. Amen. Thanks, Elmer. I heard that. Okay. Maybe God will give us a little respite and respite here. I don't know. We'll see. So they're force-fed everything Babylonian for 3 years. We might have to cut it short. We'll see. All right. Just think about it. Just think about how this would destroy you as a parent, destroy you as a nation. You have your children being taken off and this being done to them. And probably Daniel and his friends were made into eunuchs. Some of our translations will say that Ashpenaz was the chief of the eunuchs. And what we know also is that Nebuchadnezzar had a large harem. Oh, thank you. If it would just, okay, stay that way. All right. So what we know is that Nebuchadnezzar had a large harem. And, you know, here he is bringing these good-looking, strapping young boys into his palace to serve. He doesn't want them being tempted by his harem. He doesn't want them, you know, messing around with the king's ladies. And so usually he would have them made into eunuchs. I mean, we don't read about Daniel or any of his friends having families, right? So I believe that's probably what happened. And to top it all off, he changes their names. These names that were very meaningful, these names that had something to do with God, changed into something else. And commentators disagree on what exactly these names mean. Some of the commentators say, well, there's names of Babylonian gods in there. Other commentators say, well, the names are just nonsensical. But regardless, what Nebuchadnezzar is saying is that I'm powerful, my gods are powerful, and yours is not. And so we know, I think at this point we can know that what Daniel, the book of Daniel, is wrestling with is two questions. And the first question is this: how does God continue to function in and through history when history seems to have gone wrong? How does God continue to function in and through history when history seems to have gone wrong? You know, I see those comments a lot on Facebook right now, and I see the conversations, you know, especially among the generations above me, as they, you know, talk about what's going on in our country, and they shake their head and they just say, I just don't know what's going to happen. I just don't know how this, you know, everything is so much worse than it was before. So how does God continue to function in and through history when history seems to have gone wrong? How does God continue to work when it seems that God's will is not being done? When a tyrant is in power, when hope is lost, and when what used to be right is now wrong? And how do we do it without being jerks about it, right? Because we see that all the time. We see Christians who push back on our culture, and they're jerks about it. You know, they don't do it in a nice way. They do it in a way that actually makes us a little bit embarrassed to be a Christian at times, especially when we read things on Facebook and see these rants that people post. How do we do it without being a jerk? And how do we do it without being sent to the nut house at the same time, right? Because a lot of times, you know, what's going on in our culture right now is that if you believe in Jesus, and if you're a follower of Jesus, a lot of people in our culture are kind of pushing back on that and saying, I can't believe you believe in those old myths. You know, it's not true. How can you believe in a book that was written 2,000 years ago? And so there's all these this stuff swirling around. How do we live out faith without being a jerk and without sounding like we're crazy? And I believe the book of Daniel gives us at least a starting point. And I believe that us as Christians in 21st century America in the Bible Belt in Texas can actually learn some important lessons from the book of Daniel. And the starting point for these lessons is in Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Now, you may be thinking, how is that the starting point? But this is what the entire book of Daniel builds off of. This phrase, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. You see, in that single phrase, Daniel makes God bigger than Nebuchadnezzar. See that? In that single phrase, in that one sentence, not even a full sentence, the book of Daniel makes God bigger than Nebuchadnezzar. And what he wants us to know, what the writer of the book of Daniel wants us to know, is that God is in control of who is in control. You see, this is where we have to start. This is the basis of where we have to start living when it comes to good faith in Babylon. And so the question that question that we need to ask is, how big is our God? How big is our God? Is he big enough to take away your fear and your trepidation at the direction of our country? Is he big enough to take that away? Is he big enough to give us confidence in the face of discrimination? Is he big enough to keep his promises in the midst of a world that is not right? You know, we can look at it on a national scale, but we can also look at it on a personal scale. Is God bigger than that death? Is God bigger than your job loss? Is God bigger than your mental illness or the mental illness that you have to deal with as a family? Is God bigger than the addiction? And only when we acknowledge the bigness of our God can we get to the second question of the book of Daniel. The second question is this: how do people of good faith live out their convictions in a world that doesn't share their beliefs? How do people of good faith live out their convictions in a world that doesn't share their beliefs? And that's what the rest of this series, and that's what the rest of these court stories in Daniel are going to be about, is how do people who have faith in God live and act in a moment when nobody around them believes what they believe? And can they do it and still be people of influence and still be people who change the culture around them? So if you're a Christian, this is the way you need to live. This is the way we need to live. We need to seek to be people who step into our places, our spheres of influence, and be Daniels, and be Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's. If you're a non-Christian, or if you're somebody this morning who's kind of wrestling with, okay, do I really believe in faith? Do I really believe in God? Or is this even something I want to buy into? And maybe you've even been turned off by the way you've seen some Christians act. Maybe this can at least give you a picture of what God envisions for his people, and that the hatred and the evil speech that spews forth out of some people in Christianity is not the way that God envisioned his people living and acting. So how do people of good faith live out their convictions in a world that doesn't share our beliefs? I mean, what a relevant thing to look at in the 21st century church. Let's continue in worship.